podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Conversations about disparities in healthcare access almost always begin in the context of the marketplace, where therapies that have been approved by regulators can remain, for various reasons, out of reach for certain patient populations. But conversations about true equality in healthcare must begin long before market approval. In fact, they must begin at the beginning. Where and how can we ensure equality in the clinical research and development processes that generate these therapies? In 2010, through the Affordable Care Act, FDA's Office of Minority Health was established within the Office of the Commissioner to advise FDA on research and communication of regulatory science that addresses health disparities among racial and ethnic subgroups. In March 2019, the Office of Minority Health was renamed the Office of Minority Health and Health Equity. Captain Richard A. Arojo currently serves as the director of that office and as Associate Commissioner for Minority Health. She is a captain in the U.S. Public Health Service. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the DIA Global Forum. Today, I am joined by Captain Arojo, who previously was the director of the Office of Medical Policy Initiatives in FDA's Center for Drug Evaluation and Research. And now she provides leadership, oversight, and direction on minority health and health disparities for the FDA. Thank you for joining me today, Captain Arojo, and welcome.
Thank you, Alberto. It's great to be with you today.
To begin, let me ask you a basic question. Why is it important for clinical trials to include minorities? Or to put it another way, why do we need equity in clinical research?
Well, Alberto, that's a really good question. And as you know, the U.S. population is growing increasingly diverse, and ensuring meaningful representation of racial and ethnic minorities in clinical trials for regulated medical products is fundamental not only to FDA's regulatory mission, but also public health. However, racial and ethnic minorities continue to be underrepresented in clinical trials and remain disproportionately burdened by many chronic and debilitating diseases. Because clinical trials provide a crucial base of evidence for evaluating whether a medical product is safe and effective, enrollment in clinical trials should reflect the diversity of the population that's ultimately going to use that product. We know there are biological differences in how people respond to certain drugs. For example, variations in genetic coding can make a cancer treatment more toxic in one ethnic group than in another. These variations can also make drugs like antidepressants and certain blood pressure medications less effective in one population than another. So it's important for clinical trial participants to reflect the diversity of the population that's going to use the product so that subpopulation data can be appropriately analyzed and more meaningful clinical data can be communicated to the public.
This is so interesting. As you mentioned, the U.S. population is so diverse, yet it's probably safe to say that the majority of clinical research in the last, half century has probably been conducted in white patients, did not include so many minorities as might be appropriate. So this effort really is to have more representation of the U.S. population in clinical research. Would that be correct?
Yes, that's correct. And I also think that it's important for us to think about the incidence, the severity, the prevalence of the disease or condition as well.
Are there barriers that prevent or even discourage minority patients from participating in clinical trials?
There are many different reasons why minorities have been underrepresented in clinical trials. One barrier to participation that we all know well is the lack of trust because of past historical abuses, such as the Tuskegee syphilis study. Other barriers to participation may differ based on the population you're seeking to enroll and may include language and cultural differences, health literacy, religion. There may be a lack of awareness and knowledge about what a clinical trial is and what it means to participate. Some barriers may also be due to aspects of the trial design, such as inadequate recruitment and retention efforts, accessibility to the site location, frequency of study visits, transportation. Participation may also conflict with caregiver or family responsibilities and may cause time away from jobs and other commitments. However, oftentimes there may be a perception that minorities do not want to participate and they simply aren't asked.
So to the extent that minorities may not be asked to participate in clinical trials, is there a degree of conscious or unconscious bias on the part of clinical trial sponsors or even investigators who may not actively encourage minorities to participate or who may actively discourage minorities from participating in clinical trials?
Correct. There can definitely be some biases. For example, it's well known because of historical abuses and that lack of trust that many minority populations may be concerned about participating in clinical trials. So sometimes because of those biases, minorities simply aren't asked to participate. And oftentimes when asked, they are very interested in learning more and want to understand how they can participate.
One of the emerging fields these days is multi-regional clinical trials, MRCTs. Have MRCTs encouraged inclusion of more diverse patients in clinical trials, or have they not made that much of an impact yet?
Well, as you mentioned, with increasing globalization of drug development, it's become important that data from multi-regional clinical trials can be accepted by regulatory authorities across regions and countries as a primary source of evidence to support marketing approval. The designs of trials carried out in the U.S. and elsewhere are generally similar, following specifications in U.S. regulations and guidances, as well as advice and documents developed under the auspices of ICH. And we know that clinical data submitted in marketing applications may be from studies conducted outside the United States. So in all of these applications, subgroup analyses have always been an important part of nearly every clinical trial. Across the board, though, more can be done for increasing participation of diverse populations.
What innovations in patient recruitment and enrollment have increased the diversity of patients participating in clinical trials?
There's not a one-size-fits-all approach to overcoming all the barriers to recruiting diverse participants in clinical trials, and there may be specific considerations for various populations you're intending to recruit. A plan to address inclusion should be developed early on. It should not be an afterthought, and it begins and ends with the patient in mind. Consistent and continued community engagement through working with cultural ambassadors, faith-based organizations, and with trusted leaders in the community are examples of efforts that have helped support diversity in clinical trials, as well as efforts where engaging patients in trial design, logistics, and recruitment and retention practices can also help overcome some of those barriers. Site locations where there are more racial and ethnic minorities and diverse study team staff are also efforts that support recruiting minority populations. And it's also important that we engage providers. Physicians, researchers, and recruiters must have cultural sensitivity. For example, Latinos are more open to participating in clinical trials, especially when a health professional or provider they trust provides advice on how to navigate that process. Providers and other health professionals can also work with interpreters to eliminate language barriers when patients prefer to speak Spanish. So as clinical trials continue to modernize and evolve, it offers us new opportunities to reach diverse populations that we may not have been able to reach in the past. So a multi-sector approach, partnerships, engaging patients as well as providers, and sharing of best practices are opportunities for us to continue to advance racial and ethnic minority inclusion in clinical trials.
This is a huge effort, and you've just described it very well. It's very multi-pronged. It raises the question of, in practice, how can we make this happen? In other words, it's huge. It requires, as you mentioned, you know, education and training and exposure and outreach and so forth. How is it really happening? What steps is FDA taking to ensure greater equity in clinical trials? Can FDA do it alone? You mentioned a number of stakeholders and partners. Is there room here for a public-private partnership for stakeholders to come together in a concerted, very pragmatic fashion? What are your thoughts about how to actually make this happen in a big way across the country?
I think you just stated that perfectly. FDA cannot do this work alone. We work continuously to increase the participation of people in racial and ethnic and other minority groups in clinical trials through hosting public meetings. We develop tools. We've also issued guidance documents to support diverse participation. So, for example, the FDA's Office of Minority Health and Health Equity, we developed an ongoing campaign that provides positive reinforcements through education and multimedia to help address some of the barriers preventing minorities from participating in clinical trials through a variety of culturally and linguistically competent strategies and resources. For example, we developed educational materials in English and Spanish that highlight the value of clinical trial participation. We've developed public service announcements and have engaged in social media outreach in multiple languages that encourage different groups to participate in clinical trials. We also have ongoing outreach to engage different communities and health professionals to raise awareness about the need for diverse participation. And we developed close collaborations across government, academia, and industry to educate consumers and communities about the importance of minority participation in clinical trials. As I mentioned, there are efforts ongoing throughout the agency. So for example, our Center for Drug Evaluation and Research developed drug trial snapshots as part of an overall FDA effort to make demographic data more available and more transparent. We have also developed policy strategies to support diverse participation through issuing guidance documents. In 2016, we issued the Collection of Race and Ethnicity Data in Clinical Trials guidance document. And in 2017, the agency issued the Evaluation and Reporting of Age, Race, and Ethnicity Specific Data in Medical Device Clinical Studies guidance document. And all of these efforts across the agency support diverse participation in clinical trials and ultimately diversity in the data that's submitted to FDA. But as you mentioned, we cannot do this work alone. And I definitely think working together, building partnerships, and sharing of best practices is very important.
You mentioned the number of outreach programs, initiatives, efforts, et cetera. Is there evidence that these efforts are already bearing some fruit, understanding that they're huge and they take time? But do you already see emerging evidence that this is working?
I think we're starting to see more that community engagement, working with the community to help raise awareness and provide education is important. But even with engaging the community, we have to ensure that we're being consistent and we're not stepping in at the time of a trial and stepping out. So engaging and working with communities, that's also an effort that helps support clinical trial diversity. But even in that space, we're still learning and understanding how best to work with communities to advance diverse participation in clinical trials.
You said that the centers are collecting demographics. I could certainly see how the Center for Drugs, Center for Biologics, Center for Devices and Radiological Health, who review clinical protocols with sponsors, would have a pretty good visibility into the diversity of the clinical studies that are conducted. So are the centers beginning to generate demographic data that you, Captain, could look at and assess whether there is sufficient diversity in the clinical trials that are conducted and reported, say, in the last 3 to 4 years?
Yes, definitely. As I mentioned, with drug trial snapshots that's led by our Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, when you look at those snapshots, it provides consumers with information about who participated in clinical trials that supported FDA approval of new drugs. The snapshots also provide information and highlight whether there were any differences in the benefits and side effects among sex, race, and age groups.
From the point of view of, say, an industry sponsor who wants to conduct a phase 3 program and is asked by the FDA review division to make sure that the study is sufficiently diverse, does that sponsor need to include in that phase 3 study white Americans, African Americans, Asian Americans, Latino Americans, Chinese Americans, and so on? Because if that is the case, and if the sponsor is going to be required to show that the drug is effective and well tolerated in each of these subpopulations, that could make the trial really large and burdensome and long.
Well, I think that's why we focus on meaningful representation. You really have to think about the incidence, severity, the prevalence of the disease or condition that you're seeking to treat. So when we talk about advancing diverse participation in clinical trials, we're thinking about ensuring that representation represents the diversity of the population that's ultimately going to use that product. So all of those variables that you just mentioned are very important, but that's going to vary depending on the drug development for a specific product.
All right. So depending on the indication, the sponsor may be asked to look at 2 or 3 ethnic subgroups, if you will, or minorities, but not 6 or 7, if the disease under investigation is not really prevalent in 6 or 7 subgroups, but is prevalent in 2 or 3. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. And I think review divisions will work very closely with sponsors to determine, based off that particular product that's being developed, the condition it's seeking to treat, all of those variables will be very important. And those conversations are had between the sponsor and the review division.
Thank you very much, Captain Rojo. This was a very informative discussion, and I appreciate your insights today and wish you very good luck with this very important program.
Thank you very much, Alberto.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.